April 4th. All right, Senator Bach.
There's just a technical amendment to add a single word.
Okay. Well, Senator Bach, it's the first time we've had you before our committee. We're pleased to see you here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I hope that I'm pleased that I was here when this session's over. And to the committee members, I just want you to know a cute little story. Back in, I'm not sure the year, and I'm not even sure if it was the Ham Lake Fire or the Cavity Lake
Ham
Fire.
Ham Lake.
The Ham Lake Fire. Senator Bonhoff's family has had a cabin up in Cook County off the end of the Gunflint Trail for a long, long time. And one Sunday morning, my cell phone rang, and I looked at it, and it was Senator Bonhoff, and I picked up the phone, and she was crying. And she said, our cabin just burned down in the forest fire. And she said, I didn't know who to call, so I thought I should call my senator.
and I'm still upset about it, Senator Bach.
So she used to be my author on these kind of bills because their family owned property up there, and she since has relocated it to a different lake in my district. So,
right.
But members, this is, and there's a small, I describe it probably as a technical amendment that we probably should put on the A1.
Yep. So Senator Torres-Ray moves the A1. That's before us. So.
You going to adopt the A1 first?
Yep. All those in favor of the A1, aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. Back in fact, prior to 2000, probably, there was a county commissioner.
Excuse me. I'm sorry, Senator Bach. I was informed we don't even have a quorum, so can we?
I see five of you. So many, there's a lot of empty chairs. I'm keeping score here.
Oh.
Sparks were here.
Back prior to 2000, there was a county commissioner up in Cook County, a well-known name up in Cook County by the name of Hedstrom. Large family up there. One of the Hedstrom family members worked for the legislature, House, and Senate for over 30 years and just recently retired. But added to that, and it's a pretty exciting program, and I have constituents here that work in the program that can speak much more eloquently about it than I can. But what happened to us in the current budget cycle, because money was awful tight around here in the current budget cycle, is some of the money was taken away from them. So what this bill does is actually restores previous funding that was cut in the current biennium, so there's an appropriation of $18,000 per year that really puts the program whole again to where it was prior to the current biennium. So with that, I'd like to have my constituents speak to the good work that they're doing up in Grand Marais and the larger community.
Very good.
Thank you, Senator Bach, and thank you, Madam Chair and members. Appreciate you being here, and I'm glad to have made the drive today. It's nice to appreciate how much work you guys do down here, and then I know you appreciate how much work it is to drive down here and back.
Do.
So thank you. It was a great drive. Do you have some specific questions? Or?
Why don't you share the program? You know, you shared with me on the phone, and I was so inspired that I still remember that conversation, exactly what you're doing and how it works. Just tell folks about it. Oh, and say your name
for
the record.
I'm Paula Sundet-Wolf, and I'm the executive director of Cook County Higher Education. And I've been with the program actually for 16 of our 17 years, so I'm very familiar with how it started. Bill Hansen, one of our former board members, likes to call me the poster child of higher ed because I started off through with just a little bit of college experience, but started doing distance learning through Cook County Higher Education, and now I have my doctorate, which I just got last year. So
congratulations.
Thank you very much. It's exciting to be a part of a distance education program like in Cook County. Our nearest college or university is, if you're living in Grand Marais, 100 miles away, but for the average resident, it's 125 miles one way to get to a college campus. So working and living in the county and then traveling is just really not a very excellent option. So the higher education program began under the premise that people wanted to earn 4 years degrees, and we discovered after a pretty short order that really people want living wage jobs. So in talking to the employers and in talking into our community members, we've discovered different types of programs that really fit our needs. So for instance, the hospital spoke to us about a shortage of medical lab technicians, so we connected with one of the Iron Range colleges, that was Mesabi Range and Technical College, to do a medical lab technician program in our community. So that involves really a hybrid of different types of learning. We've got local instructors that can do some of the hands-on, because healthcare has got a lot of hands-on, and then there's interactive television for lecture or online for lecture, and then sometimes going to the campus itself for some face-to-face, whether that's part of the things of the lab that we can't do in our small hospital facility that they need to do on the campus. So it's an exciting way for a student to learn because they're doing it independently, and that takes a lot of initiative. And they're also getting that experience of going to a campus. So they're seeing who their school is. And then their accreditation, of course, is coming from that institution. So we're a nonprofit. We're not an accredited institution, and we don't pretend to be. We collaborate with those various different colleges and universities that can bring those programs to our community. And it's worked very well. We do some of the programs we've done are licensed practical nurse, an RN program, the certified nursing assistant. We do that twice a year. We have a local instructor for that. So a lot of the healthcare field. We also have individual programs that students can work with, like we've got a CD counseling program. Somebody else is working on accounting, business administration. So a lot of education programs with Bemidji State and College of St. Scholastica. So we really do collaborate with a lot of different institutions.
And Dr. Sundet Wolf, so if somebody is participating in a class, would they be watching that class take place, or would they be in an entirely unique experience? Would they be watching on the video monitor, the actual classroom?
Yeah, it's real-time classes. So, for instance, when we've done some of the nursing classes through Hibbing Community College, we had students that were at our site and students that were in Ely at Vermilion Community College, and then they were connecting ITV class through the Hibbing class. So all three are connecting together. And so it's very much real-time. And then those different cohorts, with healthcare programs, you have a maximum of 10 people that can be in a lab. So they would have groups of 10. So if our group is composed of 6, there might be a few others from another place that would be a part of that lab.
And how many students can be housed in your facility at one time?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
You're in Grand Marais.
Yeah.
When you're students come to that facility, how many does it, what's your capacity?
Right now we have two interactive television classrooms, and those, the classrooms for ITV, again, we can have as few as one student, which we have right now an algebra student, there's just one, and that's okay. And then we've had as many as, I think we had the largest class was 16. Mm-hmm. So again, it's small numbers, but it's nice that we can work that with the interactive television and the ITV. It provides that flexibility.
Very good. Yes, Senator Klassen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two questions. I'm curious, at any given time, how many students do you have enrolled in all of the programs? And then secondary, do you have this tied into the post-secondary students at all, high school students?
Yes, we do. The first question.
Sundet Wolf.
We have 135 or 134 thereabouts students that are enrolled in certificate or degree programs. So they're enrolled at various different colleges and universities across the state and some degree nation. They're not all just Minnesota schools. Then we have other students that are taking workshops and degrees, but if you want to count the ones that are earning the degree part, that part. And then of that, quite a few of the students are high school students, so we work with them as far as some of them are just taking the post-secondary enrollment classes so that they can go to a college campus. That's generally the case.
Thank you.
Good. And another testifier, Ms. Dittmanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Janet Dittmanson, and I serve on the board of Cook County Higher Education. I've been a board member for 5 years now, and I am a community member. I used to work at the College of St. Catherine before it became the university, and we draw a lot of members onto our board who have previous experience with higher education, and we I just wanted to testify about what we do with the students. We have mentors who come in from the community to help students and to work with students. And I've been a mentor with a number of the students. The students also, because they're a cohort in many programs, can get together and study together in our facility. And I have served as a mentor to a group of students who study together. So we have that ability to interact with the community. And I think that's a strength for our program.
Wonderful. Any other questions? Senator Bach, thanks for bringing it forward. We in this higher ed committee highly value the online blended experience. In fact, you'll see, I don't know if you're staying for the committee, it's fine if you don't, but we're doing performance metrics, and in MinSCU, we're actually proposing that there be a metric to increase and expand the online blended type of offering. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
And now we do have a quorum, so before you leave, Senator Bach, we are going to formally adopt the amendment. So Senator Torres-Ray renews her motion to adopt the A1 amendment. So all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. And then, Senator Bach, we're just going to lie this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Chances look good.
It's a pretty unique program to deliver higher educational opportunities in a very remote area. Pretty cost effective. So
great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. So now, members, what we're going to be doing is taking up a discussion on performance management. And so what we're putting forward today is a proposal, but it's really in bill format. And this proposal is subject to change, and members are free to amend the proposal as we go through it today. What we really hope to achieve with today's discussion is by the end of it that we have an agreed-upon proposal that we will then incorporate in the Higher Education and Workforce Development Division's omnibus bill. We will be taking up the omnibus bill again next week. We're on Monday. It's our plan to just put it forward for review, to go through the bill piece by piece. At that same meeting, we'll complete our discussion on the state grant program, and then review the omnibus draft, and then come together on Tuesday to actually discuss it and take amendments. So today's discussion will be an opportunity to review the proposed amendment as we put forward in terms of the metrics, and then I know people are here from both MinSCU and the university to give us their feedback and answer any questions. So I think we're going to begin with MinSCU, and so the performance funding metrics for MinSCU are before you. They say JCF 0023, and the one thing that is different about the performance metrics that we're putting forward this time versus what we've done in the past is we have adopted the recommendation of when, for example, Dr. Applegate was before us and talked about what various states were doing in this regard. He spoke about, you know, you have one extreme where you have, say, for example, a state like Tennessee that's going 100% performance related to, you know, then a broad spectrum across the board. But he really spoke about, you know, that really 5% of the budget is the floor of a meaningful performance funding metric. And so we have moved, the committee has moved in this direction whereby rather than doing a 1% holdback. We are tying 5% in the second year's appropriation to whatever performance funding metrics that we've agreed upon. And I know that that takes some risk and courage on behalf of both MNSCU and the University of Minnesota, as it is a dramatic change. And so what I would say about that is that it is our commitment to work in partnership with both MNSCU and the university to make sure that we put together metrics that are in keeping with their strategic plan, with our values and our commitment, and that are in fact achievable, because that's certainly our intention, is for everybody to win. So with that, looking at the MNSCU metrics, if you look at the first one, it says to increase by at least 4% in fiscal year 2013 compared to fiscal year 2010, graduates or degrees, diplomas, and certificates conferred. And again, this one was, we hadn't originally even put that forward, but Dr. Applegate talked about there was really nothing more important given the workforce shortage of our future than making sure we get our post-secondary graduates through the pipeline. And so that's why that one, and MNSCU actually came up with the 4%, which we really appreciated, because that seemed to be a fair and very aggressive goal. Senator Fischbach.
Madam Chair, where are you going to address the issue that MNSCU faces of the fact that there's a lot of people who, they take everybody.
Yep.
And then they have the issue of someone who may not necessarily be degree, diploma, or certificate seeking. Because if I went and took a couple of classes just to broaden my horizons for whatever reasons, I would be counted against their graduation rate because I was an enrolled student. So we need to address that. If we're going to tie their dollars to it and have them increase it, we have to address the fact that not everybody there is degree-seeking.
So, Senator Fischbach, and again, I'm open to looking at it differently, but so the 4% was the number that they felt that was achievable, and if you look at where MNSCU's been in the past with regard to their graduation rate, they have as part of their strategic mission to increase that. And I guess I would ask somebody from MNSCU at this point.
Madam Chair, I believe when I read this, I mean, I guess to that point, maybe we need some clarification. I read this as just a raw number, not a percentage of students either. So, I mean, if you decided to broaden your horizons, I guess it wouldn't count against them because it's not a percentage. It's just a raw number that they're looking to get, is the way I read that first.
That metric. First one is, yeah. It says you'd increase 4% compared to fiscal year 10. So you'd increase the amount of degrees, diplomas, or certificates that are conferred. So if somebody didn't, in that metric, they wouldn't be counted against you because it's just 4% more than you did before. So you could increase your students by a certain amount.
Madam Chair, those just going for several classes could increase, too.
Yep.
Those non-degree-seeking students could increase, too. So I understand it's a percentage, but it still could be skewed by other numbers. But I'm just concerned because I think that sometimes we focus in on, how many people are completing and those rates of, if we're certificates, diplomas, and degrees, but we're not looking at the fact that we ask MNSCU to take everybody and educate our, for whatever reason, whatever someone is seeking any kind of education or broadening their horizons, where they're taking them. And in some cases, in some statistics, it ends up playing against them.
Senator Fischbach, again, if, and I think it would be effective if Ms. King did come to the table, but this is, again, one that they thought that was the number they wanted to use for their own metric, but we're certainly open to that. And then the other thing is that we actually really do want and need our young people to be degreed. I mean, we need a certain—
Madam Chair, I'm not at all in any way, shape, or form encouraging children not to graduate from school or get their certificate. What I'm asking is that the statistics reflect the fact that there are students who are not degree-seeking.
And the graduation, Senator Fischbach, the graduation rate one is more related to that, and they put forward a 1% for that one.
Well, and Madam Chair, I look forward to hearing from Minsky so that I can better understand this.
Ms. King.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Laura King, and I'm the Vice Chancellor for Finance for Minsky. And with me is Craig Schoniker, our Director of Institutional Research. And I'd like, if I might, turn to Craig and ask him to address Senator Fischbach's concern, which is a concern we've struggled with for years.
Chair Bonhoff, Senator Fischbach, in developing these estimates of what we thought we could do in terms of performance, we certainly did take account of the fact that we have non-degree seeking students. And that first goal is, as has been suggested, a raw count of the numbers of degrees. And so what we did was look at our trends in enrollment, our trends in degree-seeking students, and felt that this was a stretch but was an achievable increment in performance. And that second measure, which is really looking at a rate like a graduation rate, it's the second fall rate of retention and graduation and transfer. That's the reason that rate is a much lower increment, because that is based on a cohort, a percent of an entering group of students coming back the next fall.
And would you say your name for the record, Mr. Schoniker?
My name is Craig Schoniker, System Director for Research with the Minsky System.
Thank you. So that does take us to our second metric, which is to increase by at least 1% the fall 2013 persistence and completion rate for fall 2012 entering students compared to the fall 2010 rate for fall 2009 entering students. So any questions with regard to that? It's a funny way to state it. With one of the challenges we have is that the reporting time is so short, and so we're trying to come up with metrics that are meaningful given the time horizon, knowing that we're really looking down a path where we want to move a direction. And so how do you come up with these tight timetable metrics? And so thank you for that one. Number three, increase by at least 4% the fiscal year 2013 related employment rate for 2012 graduates compared to the 2011 rate for 2010 graduates. And Ms. King, would you say in this one that part of this is accomplished by making sure, too, that you get that information back? Is it difficult to get the information?
Madam Chair, this particular one requires a survey that costs our campuses money and time, and so we don't do it every year.
Okay.
It is a data collection challenge for us with 35,000 graduates a year.
And I know the federal government is moving towards this measurement as well, because, I mean, that really is the measure of effectiveness, is looking at the employment rate. Questions on that one? Number four, by 2014, Minsky must increase the number of open educational resources, tools, and services offered to actualize a 1% reduction in expenses directly related to the cost of instruction incurred by students. And this one we've all struggled with. What we're trying to accomplish with this one is looking at the use of, like we just talked to the Cook County folks, use of online blended, but also in this pool would be the open source textbooks, whereby we would encourage faculty to move towards open source textbooks to save students money. So they could use any of the above to come up with the savings in tuition, fees, and books. Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How did we get to 1%? Why not 5, just throwing out a number?
Well, in this case, Senator Kent, in full disclosure, we said you had to have something to measure, and this was the one Minsky disliked the most. And so they really weren't able to come up with a number. So we picked the lowest possible number, but perhaps you'd like to address this.
Certainly. Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator. We, as you know, have been very involved in investing in online education and tools for years. We have over 100,000 students today that are enrolled in online courses. We are not able, we don't have the data that this measure contemplates. The data doesn't exist. And in our correspondence with the chair, we sought a solution to respond to her interest, and we're not there yet. I would offer to you, Senator Bonhoff. We could imagine a commitment to get the data and a commitment to complete a plan in this tight time frame that we have. But the data, if we make some assumptions about what the words mean in the Amendment 23, the data doesn't exist, and we couldn't get it in the time frame that's and put it into use in the time frame that's contemplated here. The challenge for us is that textbooks and open source textbooks they're not inventoried anywhere. So we could have, among our 15,000 faculty, we could have them using an open source textbook and we wouldn't know it. Mm-hmm. And the data systems wouldn't tell us that. So we have a data problem that we can't solve in the window that we have in this bill.
So, Ms. King, have you thought about an alternative approach to this one since we've kind of gone back and forth?
Madam Chair, we did suggest one yesterday that I know wasn't quite what you were looking for. We'd like to keep working on the language.
Okay.
Our problem is we can't reduce what we can't measure.
Right.
And this asks us to make a reduction, and we can't measure what we're reducing, so we'd be unable to execute on it.
Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just sort of as a follow-up in thinking, because I hear the methodological concerns, but is there a sample that we can do? You know, I mean, can we identify certain, you know, sample courses or departments or something like that and at least use them as sort of test cases and measure those at least year over year, for example?
Ms. King.
Madam Chair and Senator Kent, what we would suggest is that we use the period we have between now and next April when we have to report performance to get the data and develop a plan for capturing data and performance improvement year over year. Because it's, with over 3,000 courses and programs, it's a really big data challenge for us. I don't believe the sampling approach would be particularly fruitful because it's a really, really diverse environment. So if we happen to pick a field of courses that it just hadn't emerged in yet, we'd reach the wrong conclusion. So our suggestion would be that we use this year for data collection and plan development so that we know what we're measuring.
Senator Kent.
Thank you. I'm a little bit of a dog with a bone on this one, sorry. Back to the sampling idea, I mean, potentially, again, to get something started, to identify some limited number of samples of courses, departments, whatever, at least have something to work with, and then as a pilot, as a test, and then a year from now, you at least sort of know where the challenges are, where the opportunities are, and how to better evolve that, and at least making some progress.
Madam Chair, Senator Kent, I don't think we're saying different things.
Okay.
I really don't think we're saying different things. We've identified a path in through our learning management system to collect what's there, and then from there understand what changes we would have to make in coding and establishment in order to measure. So I don't think we're saying the same thing. My only concern that I would express to you is that we can't get all the way there by next April.
And Ms. King,
and reduce expenses as a result.
Your point is well taken. So I would like to keep working on it. I always turn to my counsel and say, okay, what are your good ideas? And so put them on the spot. And just one thing he just threw out there, and again, this is just for point of discussion because we have a few days, and again, we want this to be something that we agree on. But one idea, he said, what if you picked one course of study or major where you said you were going to demonstrate that through the use of either online open OER resources, there was a decrease in student expense. So you picked your own kind of laboratory and just an idea.
Madam Chair, I think we could certainly do that for data collection purposes. But the thing that was an adjustment for me when I came to Minsku is that we sit here in April and fall catalogs are already established.
Mm.
So we already have, in very large measure, the curriculum and the textbook selection in the can for the next fiscal year.
Gotcha.
That's our timing problem with this approach.
Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just think that, you know, we just all acknowledge this is the baseline. This is the benchmark. We start with something, and we recognize it's a learning year, and it at least establishes something that then we can continue. And part of your response can be, hey, one of the things we learned from this baseline year is that we need to – these are one of the things we cannot effectively capture or whatever, but we at least have some data to work with.
Madam Chair, I completely agree with that approach. My only hesitation is that the language calls for us to reduce expenses in 14.
Yeah, so I'm open. Mm-hmm. I'm open.
All right.
So let's skip back. The only other thing, I guess, is that part of what you're seeing is that there was a really strong effort on behalf of some of the committee members to represent the students' increase in moving towards open source textbooks.
We're
and
there.
we felt there was a little bit of a stonewall. And so I think this is like, come on. Not on you. It was... No, I understand.
Yeah, we're completely there.
I know
there.
You are.
And we have been, and you can see that in our mission commitment.
I know. It's just difficult to enact. Yes. Okay, so might as well sit there because we have number five. And number five was to reallocate the $22 million that really you identified already that became available through expense realignment. And so this just gives you a chance to take some credit and be acknowledged for the tremendous work you've done in your shared services work that you've identified $44 million in expense reduction. So this, we'd like some, you know, like to have visibility around it.
Madam Chair, thank you for that. Maybe I could just make some general remarks about the chair's and the committee's interest here. This measure really takes you back to the budget request that we submitted to you earlier this session. And you'll recall from that request that we led with performance measures. We led with $53 million worth of fundraising commitments on our part as part of the request for support, for additional state support. So we're there. Our board's there. You know that we've had a strategic framework and a performance dashboard. And I brought just for prop purposes, we have 26 measures that
That's
we
great.
Hold our presidents accountable for. So we're philosophically, we're in strong support of this approach. You're just taking a different approach here in this bill than we have. We have really big concerns about the 5%. And I've shared that with you, Madam Chair, but I'll say it here for the benefit of your committee members. That represents about $23 million in the fiscal 15 appropriation. And just for a couple of example purposes to explain the size of that number, it's about a $900,000 reduction to Minneapolis Community and Technical College. It's about a $2.2 million reduction to Minnesota State University Mankato. And our concern is that our schools are doing budgets right now for the next 24 months. If we get to next March or April and we haven't performed, as this language suggests, we'll have very fast budget cuts. So we're concerned about the size. We would really hope to have an opportunity to talk about how you would like to put these goals together or instead of the goals that we have in our budget request. We think that's a lot of performance measurement, and it ties up a lot of resources if we have both sets of goals moving. And I guess lastly, we would really like an opportunity to talk about the last paragraph in the bill. It would be our desire if this language goes forward for the reduction to our budget to occur in 16 instead of in 15. And it would not leave the appropriation for us. It would stay in our appropriation but be a one-time reduction. Otherwise, the incentives are getting very crooked, out of alignment. I should say, to be more elegant. So with that, Madam Chair, I would just thank you for your effort to really, really reach out to us and find a way for all of us to feel good about this. We would just observe that we've got two different approaches going on here, and we're pretty uncomfortable with the 5%.
And thank you, Ms. King, and I do appreciate that. And I, again, that's why it's really important to us that you help shape these metrics. And, you know, in the past, you achieved your 3 of 5 pretty handily, and I don't think that we've made our metrics more difficult. And, again, we asked you to help write them, shape them.
We're grateful.
Yep. And so and they're around what we have said is the kind of the guiding principles of the committee. You know, completion, getting jobs, cutting costs, and using innovation to, you know, to further student learning. So I think they are consistent with the direction that we've taken, but I'm completely sensitive to what you're saying in terms of that it is a change and there's it's a little bit at risk. And so we can discuss the 2016. As the bill stands right now, it is taken out of the second year of appropriation. And because of that, I just want to be honest with you that actually is a little more than you said because of the way the tails go in the budget.
Sure, it's a $75 million consequence to miss in the second year. That's our concern about the architecture of this.
Yeah, okay. So I got it.
That's
so we'll get back to you with regard to the 2016. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Senator Claussen.
Just one comment. Having worked with secondary education budgets, I certainly understand your concern. It takes time to notify staff to change programs. Putting people in that situation is not good, so I certainly understand wanting to extend that a year. I think we need more discussion on that, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank
Madam
you very
Chair.
Much. For
Senator Fischbach.
Madam Chair, Ms. King, you mentioned a couple of the places that, a couple of the campuses. Do you happen to have, I don't necessarily expect you to go through the whole thing right now and read me every campus and what they would be, what would be at risk. But if you have a list, I think providing that and what the effect would be on each of those campuses, that would be wonderful if you could provide the committee with that.
Certainly, Madam Chair and Senator Fischbach, I can do that, but I would have to say to you that it's a really soft set of arithmetic because we don't know what the 14 appropriation is going to be, and there are some other things that work in the formula. But it's a really good point to remember that this consequence flows directly to campus budgets.
Senator Fischbach,
St. Paul.
Excuse me, Senator Fischbach and Ms. King, I guess the other thing I would point to, though, with regard to that is, you know, whether it be $23 million or slightly more than that, we are, in our target, we have planned for an $80 million increase over base. And so what you're really saying is what you're putting at risk is you're putting a percentage of the increase rather than looking at it as though we're cutting into the heart and soul of the Minsky budget. And I think that's very important to consider. And should that number end up changing and should things change? And, you know, I'm certainly open to a different conversation, but we are talking about a significant investment in Minsky in the budget that we're putting forward. Senator Sharon.
But I would support that and would be interested as well in what Senator Fischbach is asking for. I think it is important for us to understand what risks there might be taken if we implement this so that if we support it, we understand clearly what it is that we're creating in terms of possible risk for these campuses. So I would like to have as much of a vision of that before I vote on it as well.
Senator Claussen.
Not to be sarcastic, but you've done that to the K-12 budget over and over again by cutting it and then forcing to make changes. So it's really hard to predict. I think every campus is going to have to make individual decisions on how they might cut their own budget.
Madam Chair, Senator Claussen, that's absolutely right. The presidents have broad discretion in budget setting, and we would make an adjustment to their 15 allocation were we unsuccessful in the goals. Senator Bonhoff is right. Part of the difficulty in producing a number is that we don't know which numbers we start from. You could just as easily think about this as being 5% of their 13 budget to get a rough estimate of what the impact is.
Senator, may I have the floor?
Senator Sharon.
I don't understand, Senator Claussen, you prefaced your comment by saying not to be sarcastic, and I did, if you were, I missed the sarcasm. I don't know if what you were trying to say was because we've done bad things to K-12, we should do them to higher ed or not.
No, not at all.
Senator Klassen.
Thank you. Not at all. I didn't want to be a smart aleck by saying that, but it's been done to K-12, and so we've seen the ramifications of doing that. And I'm just saying it's difficult for Minsku to provide you with that information because every individual, in our case, a K-12 school district, is going to have to make decisions on where and how they're going to cut the budget. And I think every campus is going to have to make a similar decision. They are going to get a total dollar figure, and the presidents and his staff and others are going to have to work through that number. So I think it would be very difficult. I think we can get a total budget number of reduction, but I think individual campuses, it would be extremely difficult because that's an individual site-based decision that's going to have to be made.
And again, members, we are proposing an $80 million increase in Minsku's budget, and they have identified how they want to spend it. And we're pretty much, if you look at what we will be putting forward, are supporting Minsku's choices. So,
Madam Chair, for which we are grateful.
as is this committee. And that certainly is the case. I still believe that when I vote, I need to understand as best I can with
where the money would come from if they don't make it.
What it is that we create as a consequence.
Right.
Otherwise, we go around talking about, that was an unintended consequence. Well, the way to try to reduce that is to understand it more comprehensively on the front end.
Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the thoughts I have in the notion that we are talking about a budget increase, and it's a question of would we increase it X amount or all the way to a full $80 million, in my experience in budgeting, when you're presented with situations like that, you have an opportunity to say, okay, here's my baseline budget, which is at this level of increase, and if we were to achieve our goals and get the whole amount, then we would incrementally do these good things. So it becomes more of a carrot than a stick, and it gives some flexibility and some planning. And I know timing is a critical part of this discussion, and it makes it hard because of the timelines, and you can't make these decisions and flip a switch overnight. But I do think there's an opportunity there to use this as truly performance incentives. So that's it.
Thank you. And then just to direct committee members to lines 1.22 to 1.25, we actually did identify in this particular case that if they didn't make their number, that the money would go directly towards scholarships for their students. So that we want to make sure to keep that money within the system, and that we don't want in any way students to be penalized.
And Madam Chair, before the Minsku folks leave, because I was going to just ask them about possibly, that is, the graduation rate or the certificate, if there is some idea that they would have in a way that we could help them figure out a way to be able to accurately count those students, if there was something that we had to do so that when there is a non-degree seeking student, he or she is not put into that mix. So if there's something that we can do to help you with that.
Madam Chair, Senator, thank you. We'll think about that and see if there is something that would be useful from a statutory or a K-12 relationship change to look at.
Because, and Madam Chair, at one point I even thought as simple as when they fill out their application, there's a box that says non-degree seeking, and they just X it in the corner, and then you don't add them into your statistics so that we get a truer statistic of who is seeking and gains the certificate or degree.
We share that interest.
Thank you.
Me too. Thanks. Good. Okay, now we're moving to the University of Minnesota. So whoever is representing the university might as well just come to the table, and therefore it'll be easier.
Madam Chair, before you move, could I ask you a question? I am kind of puzzled about the line that reads that has met at least three of the following.
Right. Three of five.
Right. And this is kind of my, if let's say they meet five, four, and three, they don't have to meet one and two.
Mm-hmm. And Senator Torres-Roy, we've done it that way for as long as they've been doing the performance funding. We've identified five metrics and then said they have to meet three of the five.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm kind of, I think it's interesting that that you can pick three and could leave out, you know, kind of a significant, kind of significant issues out.
And it's my experience, Senator Torres-Ray, that they actually go for all five,
yeah,
and they fall short, you know.
Okay,
yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, so the University of Minnesota, we've got the first one is increased by at least 1%, the Twin Cities campus undergraduate four-year, five-year, and six-year graduation rates averaged over 3 years for low-income students reported in fall 2014 over fall 2012. The average fall 2012 is calculated with the fall 2010, 2011, and 2012 graduation rates.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob McMaster. I'm the Vice Provost and Dean of Undergraduate Education. The metric that I had seen before here, just for the record, had to do with students of color. So this is a bit of a change, and so I...
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. You know, we had asked to move towards low income, and
okay.
the response we got back is that it might be hard to quantify. So we talked to the Office of Higher Ed, and they talked about there's a Pell definition.
There is a Pell definition.
Yeah,
yes.
And so that's kind of what we were thinking, because we thought it was more important to address all students of low income. But, you know, again, this is for discussion purposes.
It might be that we'd want to have a discussion over that metric and relook at students of color, because we'd run some of the numbers on students of color and have a bit more comfort there. In terms of some quick analysis on low income, that is Pell eligibility. And one of the difficulties with Pell eligibility, of course, is that students come in and out of Pell every year. Mm-hmm. So you'd have to come up with a standardized definition that likely would be the student comes in as Pell, and then she or he is considered Pell throughout their career. But it's likely they could shift out depending on family circumstances. But for instance, if we look at the 4-, 5-, and 6-year rates over the most recent 2-year period at the University of Minnesota, the Pell rate went up just less than 1%. In the 6-year rate, it did go up more substantially with the 4- and 5-year rates. So one of the changes here that I think would be important, and I think was in the previous measure, would be and or the 6-year rate. So what that means is we can work towards increasing the 4- and/or 5- and/or 6-year rate. It's unlikely, because of the vagaries of this metric, that every year all three will go up in a systematic way. So that would be an important change. I'd also like to have a conversation about students of color versus low income, if that would be okay.
Yep. Professor McMaster, one of the concerns we had, to be honest, about students of color is that, you know, and there are certain cohorts within students of color who just automatically are off the charts doing so well. You know, we all know, for example, Asian students just, you know, sometimes they're at the top. So we just want to make sure we're capturing. We really want to focus on those who are more economically disadvantaged. And so if you can help us with that, we're open to how you phrase it.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
We are a bit concerned, again, about the 1%, in that we're relatively confident if we look at the 4, 5, and/or 6
or
rate.
Or is fine.
Yeah.
Or is fine.
A simple increase probably is we're pretty confident on that. Whether we can hit 1% or more on these metrics is a bit more problematic. If we're looking at low-income students, they're going to have less predictable graduation rates than other students.
But again, that's why we put it in there, because it's those kids that we want to wrap our arms around. We want to provide extra resources for them. We want to make sure the mentoring's in place. We want our low-income high flyers, and that's who shows up at your university. And I will always remember the article I read in the New York Times over my winter break about those, chronicling those three women who were low-income women, but top talented kids, and each one of those three, an obstacle came in their way and they didn't make it. And it was like an 8-page spread in the New York Times. I don't know, you're nodding, maybe you read it. It was phenomenal. And I just was so passionate about, we can't do that at Minnesota. We need to make sure our eye is on those, particularly for the university, when we get those low-income students that are so smart.
Okay. Senator Bonoff, members of the committee, one of the things I'd like to do again, because we hadn't fully modeled low income, we had done a lot more work with
sure,
students of color,
to us.
Is to just take a look at those
sure.
data one more time, if that would be okay.
Sure.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
The next one was increased by at least 1%. Increased by at least, and this one we left blank because we had originally put in one, and my partners in crime over here, Senator Claussen and Senator Miller, was like, one, we want to go higher. And so we wanted to ask you about that. And that was the percent, the total number of undergraduate STEM degrees averaged over 3 years. And tell us about what's going on, because I remember when I did a tour with you and you shared with me the increase in amount of students, and we've invested so much right now in the bioscience corridor and what's happening, and I know you've expanded your enrollment in that area. So talk to us about that.
Sure. Yeah. Senator Bonoff, members of the committee. One of the issues here, and I think this measure is something that is close to what we're comfortable with, is measuring STEM students. So the easy way to measure STEM students is to say, well, the STEM students at the undergraduate level are in the College of Science and Engineering and the College of Biological Sciences. Well, in fact, if you look at federal definitions of STEM and who's really in STEM, you could say psychology students are part of STEM, geographic information science students are part of STEM, and you could expand that even certain fields like economics, where they're getting a Bachelor of Science, would be part of that. So I'm just mentioning that actually measuring STEM students is highly problematic.
Would yeah. you like to, and I'm just wondering, instead of an increase, do you have in mind a certain number of degrees you want to confer
yeah.
for STEM students?
Not really, again, because of the definition and of
We'd
STEM
like
students.
You to.
Yeah. Now, the in terms of the percent here, 1% would, again, be something we're most comfortable with, and I'll tell you why. On the Twin Cities campus, we have a pretty clear goal of increasing STEM students. We control the admissions into certain colleges. But you're asking for this number for the whole campus or the whole system. So as we look at Crookston, as we look at Morris, as we look at Duluth, there's less certainty in that we're increasing the STEM numbers there.
Would you like that metric to be for Twin Cities?
That would be a better way for us
and
to
measure
that.
And that's where we've invested these resources, so
yes.
I think that makes sense.
Madam Chair?
Senator Claussen.
Just one thought. I'd be comfortable in working with the university system and identifying that we have a similar definition for STEM.
Okay.
Yeah.
If that's agreeable.
And Twin Cities. So let's do both.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay. Sure.
Great.
But again, in terms of the number of students, because our enrollments are relatively flat, that is, we're not admitting significantly more students, I think 1% would be reasonable, and we'll start to measure that carefully and see how that goes and maybe adjust that in a couple of years.
Thank you. Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question here is, you know, the limitations of our ability to do long-term planning, and because you know, you're talking about graduates who are already sophomores, and there's only so much we can do in that pipeline. But if we could look at a goal for, you know, 4 or 5 years from now, and then, you know, have that out there, and then have some interim goals along the way that I think, you know, would be meaningful. I mean, we'd be working to something that people have real control over. I just throw that out there as, like, I don't know if it's doable.
Well, Senator Kent, that's what the Lumina folks said, that is the most impactful. And it's just hard because we, you know, our planning, it's not like a business.
Right.
We do
two-year
biennium.
Yeah.
But we can certainly put thoughts out there and then have a very interim. So why don't you work with Senator Claussen on that one, too? Senator Claussen.
Just a kind of a response. When we hear that we are having a shortage of engineers in the United States, it begs the question for me to ask, why aren't you admitting more students then into the School of Engineering?
Yes. Senator Bonoff, Senator Claussen, we are, in fact, admitting more students as engineers, but we have limitations in terms of the facilities, the laboratories, the faculty, the financial aid. So we have to do it with caution so we won't let too many students in and then possibly degrade the quality of education. So there has been a plan to increase students in those two colleges. We've been doing it. But as Senator Kent notes, we're looking now at students that are already in the pipeline. And so if there's going to be a plan to increase, let's say, STEM students by 5%, the university would have to do some very careful planning over the next few years to make sure we could continue to provide a quality education for those students.
Very good. Thank you. Next, we've got number three, increased by at least 1%, the four-year, five-year, and let's say and or six-year graduation rates at the University of Minnesota.
Yes, Senator Bonhoff, members of the committee, thank you for making that change and
yes.
or. That's a very important one. Just to mention again the fragility with the system campuses here.
We know, and thank you for being willing to do that one, because I heard back you were willing.
Yeah, the for instance, in 2005, the five-year rate went down at Crookston. In 2004, the six-year rate went down at Duluth. So in any given year, given that we're dealing with smaller numbers, one or more of the system rates is likely not to go up. So I just wanted
it's
the committee
aggregate.
To be mindful of that.
Yeah. Thank you. The next one, we left blank, and we're looking for guidance, and it's been a tough one. We know that you've done your spans and layers and that your first focus is on the four areas, procurement, IT, finance, and human resources. And we know you did that because you want to lower costs in those four areas because that's what you need to tackle as you tackle this overall objective of making sure that you're most efficient. So give us some help.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Julie Tonneson. I'm the Associate Vice President for Budget and Finance at the university. This one in particular, as you are aware, the president and the university are committed to reducing administrative cost and to working smarter. We actually last summer and fall, and I forget who we've shared this with, but we did an internal analysis and a cost definition and benchmarking exercise.
They reported it to us.
We saw
the whole thing.
Okay. And so we are committed to monitoring this activity and to using that as a management tool. And actually for the FY14 budget development internally within the university, we are using that analysis at the unit level, at the college and campus level, to say when you're making your reallocations, we want you to focus on moving expense out of the administrative oversight and mission support areas into direct mission. So we're using that as a tool. The recommended metric that we provided you is actually aligned with that analysis rather than the spans and layers. And the reason for that is these particular four areas, we currently do not measure expenditures defined this way. So we don't have a base today.
Well,
to measure, and let me give you some examples. Let's just take me as an example. With my title as a person in the system, my official title is Associate Vice President, period.
Okay.
I could be an Associate Vice President for Student Affairs, having nothing to do with finance, HR, and so forth. And we have multiple positions that are like that, or that might be more general in term. So it might be called a coordinator who works half-time actually implementing an academic program, 25% time doing finance work or purchasing, and 25% doing HR. We can't pull the data
So, Ms. Tonneson, and are you Dr. or Ms.?
Just Ms.
Okay. It's not just. It's okay. So, anyway.
University, sometimes it is.
Okay, I understand. I know that by July, you're going to have the rest of that spans and layers work done, and you're going to look at those in these categories. So I don't exactly accept that you cannot define it in these categories because you are defining it in these categories.
Yes, Madam Chair, let me explain. To put it in the metric today with a percent without having
don't have to say percent. Okay. Give me a dollar. I mean, I'm telling you, we're looking for you to cut costs and help us. Tell us how much you want to cut them by.
Right. Well,
Minsk, you said 22 million. However many you think is viable in this time period.
Madam Chair, I appreciate that. And we can hopefully have a little time to think about under these definitions what that might be.
And if the definition has to change, but I didn't agree with maintaining or decreasing. Okay, that
yep.
didn't.
Yep.
And then I also thought it was too broad. This whole thing. I'm not looking at the whole enchilada with this one, where you were like the whole operating and this and mission. I would just cut your administrative costs by just tell us what you think you should do.
Madam Chair, we will go back and think about it with this definition. It's just we went through all that work to define what we thought was administrative cost, and this is a little bit different. And so we don't have a base. And so to recommend today a dollar amount or a percent
That's
is difficult
fine.
Because we don't have
Senator Klassen.
Yeah. Just I think you're aware that this is, in the eyes of the public, this is an extremely sensitive issue, shall we say? And I think the public is looking for a response. We're looking for a response. So I just want to stress that this is critical, and we need to see some movement yep. in this area.
Madam Chair, Senator Klassen, and the university is committed. The president is very committed to doing this. So it isn't – we're not arguing that point. It really is about our ability to arrive at a definition and a dollar and a percent and that type of thing, and we will work on that with you.
Thank you. Senator Miller?
Thank you, Madam Chair. If the university can't come up with a number, I'd be happy to throw one out there.
And he's good.
And Ms. Hunt, you should
– I like my numbers.
It's not
going to
be nice.
Way tougher than me. These two are who I work with on this stuff, and they've been way tougher than me. They're like 1%. I'm like, you guys, just swear, you know.
I like to stress we are not part of the same party, however.
Yes. And Madam Chair, members, 1%, you know, in this particular case of the total budget,
it's a lot.
Is $31 million of the total. So
whatever. That's right. I'm yep. totally open. Yep. Please okay. share with us.
Sure.
Okay. And then the final one, and the reason I'm going a little bit quickly is I actually have to cut the committee time short today, and so we will be coming back, but did want to make sure we got to thoroughly review them today and give you that chance. So the final one was to increase invention disclosures by 3%, and that was your proposal. So yeah, there. Yes, he was great. Very good. And again, my hat's off to you and your team for participating in this exercise, and we really appreciate that you are our partners in it. And we're proud of the University of Minnesota. We, you know, think that you are champions.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, members, in summary, this is our recommendations. We'll put them in the omnibus draft that you'll get. You are welcome to propose amendments. I'm a little sensitive, as you can see, on these because it took so much to get to a place where we were somewhat in agreement, but have at it. You know, that's the process, so I understand that.
Well, may I ask some questions
sure.
about that? Your sensitivity about the changes really are about, you feel as though these were negotiated agreements over a period of time.
Yeah.
But in terms of the concerns about the consequences of these and its potential negatives, I heard one of the concerns is that it's written in a way that really attacks the base funding rather than being a temporary kind of consequence. So we need to take a look at, I need to be certain that the language is written in a way where this money that's transferred to the educational scholarships is not impacting the base funding.
Senator Sherman, thank you. We'll look at that and we'll find a way.
Madam Chair.
Senator Torres-Ray.
I also have a question about the cost associated with this. Is that something that we're going to see?
There's not a cost associated.
Okay, I didn't.
Okay. So with that, thank you very much. The committee is adjourned, and the next time we'll be meeting will be Monday from 12 to 2:30. There will be two purposes on Monday. One, to hammer out the final state grant solution, and then to review the draft proposal. And a huge thank you to my staff, both Dave Kornecki, Maya, John, Sean, for the tremendous work to pull this together at this point. And Greg and Jeremy too. So thank you very much. Oh, Senator Sharon.
I'm sorry, just for clarification, when you're talking about reviewing the state grant recommendations that we're becoming familiar with here, are these available for people to see before that meeting as stakeholders that may want to make comments, or were the first time they see
the first time will be they'll see that will be Monday, okay. But they're not secret, so I've already shared them with a whole group of students, with MinSCU.
So stakeholders
yeah.
are aware. Okay,
yeah.
good. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Committee is adjourned.